You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colton Molesky, and whoa, that was a crazy game. Holy balls, I have Mitchell Hansen on the line. Mitch, it's been far too long since we talked to you last, but what a game we get to talk about.
Yeah, it was, you know, it kind of seemed like anything that you could have hoped would have happened in last night's game or kind of wanted to happen in last night's game happened. Obviously, there wasn't a lot of defense, but you know, it was a pretty fun game to watch, and it was a heck of an ending, that's for sure.
Going into the game, I saw that the Timberwolves were favored on the road first time, and David Naylor had a great stat when we were talking about this game. I think it was the first time since like 2007 or 2010 or something crazy, a really, really long time, let's say, since LeBron has been a home dog in a regular season game. And so that made me a little nervous. Maybe LeBron was going to come out and show up in a big way for this game. But then I was thinking, they don't have any defense. It's not going to be a problem. It's going to be okay. Defense was not the problem, offense was definitely not the problem in this game. Nobody got slowed down by anybody else. 140-138, the Cavaliers beat the Timberwolves in OT on a last second. Literally the last second, they beat the Timberwolves 140-138. We'll get to that in a little bit here. We've got a ton to break down in this game. First of all, the duel between Jimmy Butler and LeBron James. Jimmy Butler had 35 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals. LeBron James with the triple-double, 37, 15, and 10. What did you think of this duel? I love seeing these two players, especially late in this game, going back and forth. What did you think about the duel between, I would say, the two MVP candidates in the NBA right now, LeBron James and Jimmy Butler?
You know, it was a ton of fun, you know, obviously to watch those two kind of go back and forth, you know, and it kind of seemed like, you know, near the end of that third quarter, it's kind of when, you know, things kind of picked up in the fact that, you know, teams were just nailing every three that they were throwing up. And, you know, the game kind of was getting out of hand to an extent there where the score was just kind of, you know, crept up and things were going crazy. But that's kind of when, you know, Jimmy and LeBron kind of, you know, went into that extra gear that, you know, a lot of people always talk about that the great players are able to do. And, you know, it seemed like every time down the floor, even near the end of the fourth quarter and into the start of overtime, it was, okay, Minnesota has the ball. You know, what's Jimmy going to do? You know, is Jimmy going to be able to, you know, carry Minnesota? And then it flips over to Cleveland, and it was the same thing with LeBron. So it was a ton of fun to watch those two go back. And it was, you know, it was really fitting that, you know, even though things didn't go Minnesota's way in the end, it was really fitting that it ended up with those two one-on-one at the end. And ultimately, LeBron ended up hitting the game-winning shot over Jimmy. But it was a ton of fun to watch those two go back and forth. You know, they both logged quite a bit of minutes. Obviously, the game went into overtime, so that, you know, that skews things a little bit. But, you know, Jimmy had a little over 46 minutes. LeBron had a little over 48 minutes. So they were, you know, it was a dogfight, especially in between those two, and you know, it was a ton of fun to watch. I wish we could just watch those two go at it every night. That'd be a ton of fun.
It really would be. And you look at the score of the game, and maybe you think, well, maybe there was a bunch of points scored in the overtime as well to help that final score. These teams were tied at 129 apiece going into overtime. Each team only scored under 30 points in one quarter. You had in the first quarter, Minnesota had 29. In the fourth quarter, Cleveland had 28. The rest of the game, these teams were putting up at least 30 points in every quarter. Crazy offense. Like you said, everybody was hitting shots, and it was a tight game too. It's not like one team had to come from behind to push overtime. 34 lead changes in this game. It was insane. Great back and forth matchup. I saw Tim and Dane, of course, for zonecoverage.com, were at the game. They'll be at the Chicago Bulls game as well on Friday night. He tweeted out after the game that was just a lot of fun to be at and a lot of fun to watch. Really great game, just viewing-wise. If you weren't a fan of both these teams, just to watch this game as far as basketball, if you enjoy the game of basketball, great game for that as well. Just a fun back and forth game. it was a blast. Even with the outcome being kind of heart-wrenching with the way Cleveland won, still just such a fun game to view.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you just like look at, I mean, there's a lot of factors in this game, of course. There's a lot of different aspects of this game. You look at three-pointers alone, obviously that combined for 43s, which is, you know, an NBA record. But Minnesota was making 19, Cleveland was making 21. But, you know, it seemed like, you know, specifically in that third quarter, it was like, you know, Cleveland would get on the floor and hit a couple threes. Minnesota would come back down the floor and answer with a couple threes of their own or vice versa. And, you know, it was just a lot of fun to watch. It. I know Tim tweeted out during the game that it kind of had an all-star game vibe to it, or an all-star game feel to it, and that's kind of what it was. But it was a competitive all-star game, basically, you know, with all the threes falling for both sides. So, you know, even in that third quarter, it was, you know, that's when you kind of got the sense that, okay, these teams might actually score 150 points in this game with the way this thing's going. So it was a lot of fun to watch, and, you know, obviously, you know, if you look at it or if you break it down from Minnesota's perspective, you can't let that happen, or even Cleveland's side of things. You can't let an opponent do what both teams did. But, you know, that's just kind of, you know, how the way the game was going. And, you know, even if one team wasn't hitting 19 threes or 21 threes like both teams did, this game's an absolute blowout. And, you know, the team that lost that game is, you know, thinking what happened. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was a lot of fun from a fan's perspective and even just a basketball junkie's perspective just to watch a game like this happen. But, you know, if you're looking at Minnesota and you're looking at the defensive side of things, next up against Chicago, you want to try and fix a couple things on the defensive end, definitely.
No, yeah. Well, the thing is, too, is you mentioned everybody seemed to be able to hit from three. You had J.R. Smith looking like the old J.R. Smith. He had 20 points. He went 6-for-11 from three. But everybody who attempted a three-point shot on Cleveland had at least 50% shooting or better. Even Jay Crowder had 50% 1-for-2. And then outside of Bielitsa on the Minnesota side of things, same story almost. You had Jamal Crawford at 40%, and then you had Teague at 50%, Butler at 80%, Towns at 100% going 6-for-6, big boy putting up shots, Wiggins 4-for-8 going 50%. You had just some great three-point shooting. Teague had 50% shooting. Really great three-point shooting from both these teams. Just, and I know that has something to do with the defense, but there's also something to be said for two teams who really feel the spotlight and knocking down everything that they're able to find. And obviously the perimeter defense wasn't great in this game for either side, but both teams were also really feeling it. I liked the Jamal Crawford, J.R. Smith kind of under the radar back and forth in the first half. Both of those guys kind of trading shots early. Jamal Crawford had 16. And in this game, too, you had something you don't see all the time from the Timberwolves. They were good from three-point range. They attempted 33 shots from downtown, shot 57.6% from range. This is one of the first games, I think, we've maybe seen this one or two more times throughout the season, where they actually go from range. Not that they shoot well from range, but they actually stretch the floor and really put up a lot of shot attempts from downtown. Usually they hover it around that 21 to 25 mark as far as three-point attempts. This is the first time they've actually really stretched the floor on a defense, and I like the look of the offense when they do that. Again, Cleveland's defense is awful, but still, their offense looks so much better when they actually stretch the floor.
Yeah, it does, and they were really, you know, it wasn't just one guy in particular that was, you know, really hurting Cleveland, or from Minnesota's, you know, standpoint, and hurting Cleveland from three. You know, obviously Towns went 6-for-6, like you said, and other guys were hitting shots as well. But just the way that they were able to, you know, kind of battle back into the game, that's something that we really haven't seen Minnesota do in, you know, battling back, you know, from beyond the arc. And, you know, that's kind of an area that, you know, they've struggled in this year is, you know, when they fall down, they kind of end up giving the ball to Jimmy and a lot of, you know, iso ball, and things don't end up going their way in the end. You know, later on in this game, and, you know, specifically in the fourth quarter, they had, you know, Wiggins step up big. Obviously, Jimmy was big in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Towns had a couple big threes. You know, Jeff Teague, early on in the game, you know, it was kind of nice to see him not being very, you know, hesitant like we've seen in the past with him from beyond the arc. You know, obviously, Jamal, you know, made a couple threes. Belly was, you know, doing, you know, what we've seen him, even early on in the year or even last year, he wasn't hesitant from three, which is nice to see, you know, along with Jeff Teague. So, you know, it was just very, I wouldn't say uncharacteristic of the Wolves, but it has, you know, we haven't seen a collective effort like this from Beyond the Arc this year. And, it, you know, it is, when they get into games like this, it's nice to know that they have the capability to do the breakout into a game like this. You know, we have seen it very rarely, but we've seen it before where they've, you know, been able to do something like this. Mainly it's just kind of been the starters, but, you know, this is an encouraging sign, and hopefully that, you know, they don't have to shoot, you know, 33 threes and make 19 of them every game, but if they can, you know, even cut that in half and you know, make even double-digit threes every game, that, you know, that'd be a big step forward for Minnesota.
We're going to continue to break down this really fun game. First, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsors. I'm going to rip a stat out of context here a little bit. I was looking up some numbers. The Timberwolves are 5-4 when Karl-Anthony Towns has more than 6 three-point attempts, and one of those losses was early in the season when they played the Pistons and Jimmy Butler was out for the first time and they were still gelling. I don't know if I even count that one. I'm going to say the team is 5-3 when Towns has more than 6 three-point attempts. Is there something to that, or am I ripping that out of context?
I mean, you know, I think that it is encouraging, obviously, and it's very helpful when Towns is, you know, he is a threat from beyond the arc, and he is hitting shots like he has really in the last couple games from beyond the arc and for most of the season. You know, that adds a different aspect to this Wolves team that, you know, maybe, you know, clearly they don't have when Towns isn't stepping, you know, outside of the paint. But, you know, I don't know if, you know, I that is an important stat, and that, you know, it is kind of eye-opening that, you know, the Wolves are a much better team when Towns is hitting from beyond the arc, or even if he is, you know, throwing up shots from beyond the arc. But, you know, it is important not just with Towns that, you know, he is, you know, converting from three, but, like I said, the rest of the Wolves team, you know, specifically Andrew Wiggins and, you know, that second unit, when they're on, you know, Wiggins is, you know, hitting 2-3-4 threes a game, or, you know, 4 like he did last night, I think that mainly elevates Minnesota to another level. But, you know, when Towns is finding success from three, and, you know, he is, you know, that gives him kind of the capability to step up late in the game and, you know, be that three-ball threat, and it gives him a lot more confidence, I think. And that only helps Minnesota, and that, you know, that's definitely a positive thing, and that's, you know, something they should look for moving forward.
Well, and when you're an opponent, and now that they have Jimmy Butler on the roster, it's really hard to justify putting your best defender on anybody outside of Jimmy Butler, regardless of how hot they are that night. And so when you look at how teams try and guard Towns, if he starts putting up, even if it's just like 5 attempts from outside, You kind of look at what the team's doing to try and defend them, and they don't really have a good answer for when. Because, again, he had 12 shots last night, or 12 shot attempts last night. So he was shooting from a couple different places. And when he's stretching the floor like that and still posting up, it's really hard for a team to kind of figure out what to do with that defensively. And so it makes a huge mismatch, because then if they throw a smaller guy out there, then he doesn't have to pull it, and he can start driving it in on that smaller guy. And if they switch back to the bigger guy, I just don't know if there's a ton of guys who have the speed along with the strength to play with him in multiple spots on the floor. And I just think it's a real big matchup advantage. Maybe he doesn't shoot 6 times from three-point range every single night, but if he can even shoot 4 times, that's going to put a lot of teams in a tough spot defensively.
Right, exactly. And you look last night, I think it was late in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe even in overtime, when Towns hit a big three to, you know, late in the game to, you know, put Minnesota, I believe it was put Minnesota ahead, or at least tie the game back up. That, you know, that's the kind of offense that I think what you're talking to in some regard, in the fact that, you know, Towns is able to, when he steps outside of the line or outside of the paint, you know, a lot of times in the fourth quarter or late in the games, Jimmy Butler likes to attack and drive to the basket to try and get himself to the free throw line. Andrew Wiggins was kind of the same way. So when you do have, you know, throughout the game, you have, you know, Towns obviously stepping behind, you know, behind the arc, and as well as him being in the paint, you know, when he is outside of the 3-point line, you know, late in the game with Jimmy and Andrew both driving to the basket and attacking, like you said, that, you know, that puts defenses or opponents, you know, that kind of makes them pick their poison and decide who they want to choose in that situation. And, you know, if they do choose Jimmy, then, you know, Towns can hurt you from deep. And if they do choose Towns, then, you know, obviously Jimmy's going to do his thing inside the paint as well as Wiggins. So that is a kind of a, you know, that's an important thing for Minnesota, and that's a dangerous, you know, aspect that Minnesota can, you know, pull out towards the end of the game and throughout the games. That, you know, we kind of saw that again last night, that, you know, Jimmy was able to get to the basket, and then late in the game they kind of kicked it out to Towns, and he was able to hit a couple threes from beyond the arc. So they are able to hurt you in multiple ways. It would be nice to see, you know, not just Towns be that guy on the outside, but whether it's Wiggins or another 3-point threat on the floor at the same time. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Jamal Crawford, maybe it's Bielitsa, maybe it's even Jeff Teague. But it would be nice to see another, you know, somebody that's capable of hurting teams, you know, beyond the arc, that is out there at the same time, so that, you know, if they, you know, do shut Minnesota down in the paint, that they, Minnesota has the capability of hurting you from beyond the arc, kind of like what they did last night.
You highlighted Teague earlier too. I just wanted to kind of bring it back to him quickly. 15 assists in this game. Mm-hmm. I really liked that when on a night where Butler, it really seemed like he wanted to flip into the high octane score, and he ended up putting 35 points up, and he really wanted to lock into kind of going toe to toe with LeBron scoring wise and going back and forth, and then really kind of shut somebody down on the defensive side and really try and lock some people up on defense. I really liked that they were able to seamlessly flip over to Teague as the playmaker on offense, and he produced in a big way. 15 assists was huge. He had the 14 points as well, but I thought that the offense really ran well through him, and he did a good job as in the facilitator role, especially in a time where they really needed him to, because Butler was kind of locking in as the scorer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess look at it this way too, that a lot of, you know, Minnesota did shoot 58% from the field, which, you know, that is a pretty impressive number, but still to have 15 assists is, you know, it's pretty important. And that was a big aspect of the game as well. You even look at Tyus Jones, who had 5 assists in a little over 14 minutes. Obviously he didn't score. He didn't play a whole lot, but, you know, having 20 assists combined between both guards, that's, you know, that is pretty important, and Minnesota ended up with 33 assists in the end. So it seemed like the offense and kind of the flow of everything was a lot more smooth last night. I don't know if that's, you know, the increase in pace to some extent or what was the biggest factor to that, or the success from beyond the arc, but, you know, it did seem like, you know, everything was flowing a little bit better, and you know, that is credit to Jeff Teague and somewhat to Tyus Jones as well. And that they were, you know, kind of able to have a control of the flow of the offense and what was happening on the offensive end.
One thing that, I mean, obviously you don't want to give up 140 points, and we're going to talk about the last second of this game, I promise, but there's just so much to break down this game. One thing that sticks out to me, the Cleveland Cavaliers had 7 offensive rebounds, which isn't bad, but they had they had 14 second chance points, which means they scored on all of their offensive rebounds. Is that a little bit of a concern, where the team, the defense of the Timberwolves just showed kind of a lackluster showing after they got the initial stop, to have the team score on every single one of their offensive rebounds? Is that a little bit of a concern for you, or is that just the nature of this game where everybody was hitting seemingly everything?
I wouldn't say it's too concerning, in my opinion, just because, you know, when you do have a lot of outside shots like that, or you know, a lot of shots from three, you're going to have a lot of long rebounds, and you're going to have a lot of offensive board possibilities and second chance point opportunities on both sides. So I think that's a bulk of the reasoning behind the 7 offensive boards. Obviously you want to see that number shrink no matter how many 3-point attempts that a team has, but, you know,
that they were scoring on all of them. Like, 7 offensive boards isn't terrible, but the fact that they scored on every single one of them isn't great.
Right. And, you know, even I think to your point somewhat, you know, when you do have a offensive board, a lot of times you're not, you know, necessarily shooting from three either. So you're getting a lot of long rebounds, and then you end up driving to the paint, you get a layup or whatever it may be, or a, you know, a mid-range shot of some sort. So, yeah, I mean, I can see it from both sides that, you know, if it is a, you know, with the number of offensive rebounding or offensive rebounds, with, you know, with those 3-point correlation and everything involving that, you know, it would be nice to see that number shrink. And, you know, like you said, with them being able to score on those second chance points, that maybe is a little concerning that, you know, the Wolves, I wouldn't say, you know, they gave up or anything, but they, you know, if they are, you know, satisfied with that first stop, they got to, you know, got to play it through until they get the ball back, obviously. So, you know, obviously everything was kind of falling in this game, you know, at both sides, everything was dropping from no matter where they were on the floor. But, you know, that is something that Minnesota needs to kind of, you know, correct and kind of turn things around, especially coming into the Chicago game.
We're going to take a quick break from our sponsors before we talk about that final set of plays that ended up putting the Timberwolves away. So you have the shot from Jimmy Butler. He drives in, and it looks when he gets the switch. Who was it? I think it was Korver on him. Was it? I failed to remember. I'm sorry, folks. I'm blanking on who was on him because he got the switch. LeBron was switched off of him on the high screen, and then he drives in, and LeBron comes from the one side to the other after the shot's in the air and blocks it. It was a terrific block right into J.R. Smith's hands. They take the timeout. 1 second, literally 1 second left on the clock, and for some reason, it's just Jimmy Butler down there with LeBron James one-on-one. Everybody else is pretty close to where they're inbounding the ball, and they launch it down to LeBron James. He literally grabs it and pops it right around near the free throw line. It's about an 18-foot shot or so, and he sinks it as the buzzer goes off to go up 140 to 138 in overtime. Tremendous play from LeBron to be able to pop that shot in a second. And unfortunate for Jimmy Butler after a very solid game to have the last shot go over him. My first question is, why didn't Jimmy Butler, I know I'm fine with him taking the last shot. Why didn't he just stop? He does that thing so often where he's about 15 feet out and he just stops and the defender goes flying and he banks it in off the top corner, off the glass, into the basket. I thought that was the shot he was going for after that switch because LeBron would have stuck to him on that. But after the switch, I thought that was the shot he was going for, and he kind of did the drive in and then fade back off the side. Was that the right shot that you wanted to see from him, or were you looking for him to do that little drive and stop thing from about 15 feet out?
I don't necessarily have a problem with the shot selection that, you know, that Jimmy chose near the end. You know, I would have liked to maybe see him, you know, initiate that a little later. You know, I think when you have the ball, obviously the game tied, your shot clock's expired, you don't have 24 seconds left on the clock. You know, I think that, you know, you need to have the ball until the clock runs out. And when I say that, I mean, you need to, you know, run the clock down as far as possible and then make sure that when your shot's going up, you're obviously beating the buzzer. But that your when your shot attempt goes up, that, you know, there's no time left because you do allow other teams. I don't care if it's Cleveland, I don't care if it's Chicago, whoever it may be. You don't want to give them an opportunity at the end to do what Cleveland did last night. So, you know, I think that, you know, maybe if, you know, he waited another, whatever it may be, 3 seconds, two, 3 seconds, I think that obviously would have been helpful. Even if the shot didn't fall, then at least you force a double overtime. You allow yourself more time, kind of regroup, and then you can try and take care of things in the second overtime. But, you know, I don't necessarily have an issue with the shot selection. Obviously, you know, with Jimmy and what he's been able to do this year, I think, you know, he for one, earned the right to take that shot, and two, you know, you kind of let him do his thing down the stretch. But, you know, I definitely would have liked to see him, you know, initiate that a little bit later and not as soon as he did, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and two, I just want to make it clear, I am totally fine. Jimmy Butler's the guy I want mm-hmm. taking the last shot in a game, obviously. I was just, he's got like five or six kind of go-to tricks in his bag of offensive shots, and I was just surprised that he went for the drive and kind of fade away from five or six feet out as opposed to that kind of drive and stop from 15 feet out where he banks it off the glass. Seemed to be the play there. But then you have the shot. Now, Am I wrong, or do you put two guys on LeBron 100% of the time, and just if they make the full court lob, they make the full court lob, but don't let LeBron have man-to-man right near the basket? I was surprised they didn't have Wiggins and Butler both down there by him.
Yeah, I agree. At least have, you know, one more guy, because there was, what, two Cavs players down on that end of the court, including LeBron. Down by their basket near the end of the game. But there was also, I'm drawing blanks on who the players were, but there was two players that were, you know, beyond half court yet, or that hadn't crossed half court yet, and there was two Minnesota defenders on them. I see you bring at least one of those defenders back, so you have kind of a three-on-two defense down, you know, near where LeBron was when he got that shot off. So you can double-team LeBron. And then if they do pass the ball in, you know, those two players that are, you know, not past half court yet, you at least have one defender there to kind of contest it and not just allow them to have a half court heave. So I was kind of surprised that they, you know, Tibbs and the coaching staff and the Wolves in general decided to, you know, kind of, you know, just only have one guy on LeBron. Obviously that, you know, that was everything that happened in that final play was exactly what Cleveland wanted, and that's exactly how they drew it up. But, you know, it was surprising that, you know, they did only have one person on LeBron. And I guess if you do have one person, or if you choose just one person, you know, Jimmy Butler's going to be that guy on LeBron. I mean, he's kind of stepped up all year in on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I think that they definitely should have had another guy down there. And, you know, that if, you know, if they do, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but if they have another guy down there, maybe LeBron doesn't make that shot.
Well, and let's be honest. Let's be perfectly honest. You put five Timberwolves players on LeBron, and you have the other three Cavaliers players right down underneath the basket. They still inbounds that ball. They inbound the ball to LeBron James. That's who it was going to. Put two guys on. Don't worry about the half-court heave. Put two guys on LeBron. It's not going anywhere else. He told them in the timeout, throw the ball to me. I don't care who's on me. I don't care how many guys are on me. Throw the ball to me. I'm going to take this last shot. That's who is getting the ball. So it just, I know that you technically you want to have a guy on every guy in the last second, and you want to look out for the half court heave because it does happen, and these are professionals and they make crazy shots all the time. But the ball was going to LeBron. It's Cleveland in Cleveland, overtime, tie game. The ball was going to LeBron James, and you put two guys on him. And I just didn't understand that. Oh gosh, look at the time. The Kings suck. They hopefully can beat the Kings. Let's move on to love hate. Mitchell's love hate segment of the week, where he gives us what he has loved, what he has hated from the last week of Timberwolves basketball. Mitch, go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm going to kind of tie this back in with all the 3-point shooting. You know, I'll start with some of the hate. You know, obviously Minnesota's kind of been able to live or die, for most of the year they've lived or died from the opponents being able to hit threes from beyond the arc. You know, they obviously ranked 21st in the league in opponent three-point attempts. They're 23rd in opponent three-point made. And they're 21st in percentages as far as, you know, opponents being able to convert from three. So that's something that you'd like to see them short or, you know, kind of correct. You know, that's kind of been the story this year for Minnesota, is opponents have been able to kind of hurt them from three. And, you know, you even look back at last night's game or even, you know, one that comes to mind is the Houston Rockets game, you know, a couple weeks back. You know, Minnesota needs to be able to, you know, cut those amount of attempts and, you know, amount of success opponents are having from beyond the arc. They need to cut that down, and they need to try and correct that. They are, you know, they're dead last in the league as well as in opponents' field goal percentage, allowing opponents to score 47.8%. So, that, you know, that's something that they need to correct. That, you know, that obviously stems back to everything on the defensive end and Minnesota struggles there so far this year, but that's something they need to correct. And we'll switch over to love. You know, Minnesota's, for the last couple games, you know, you look back at last night with their 19 three attempts, you even look back at, you know, the win against New Orleans with 10 three-pointers made. You know, Minnesota's been able to shoot the three recently, which is very encouraging to see, because, you know, when they do get in games like last night, if they're able to hit the three, you know, find some success from beyond the arc, that's something that Minnesota will need to do, especially if they want to, you know, have some success in the playoffs and even near the end of the regular season. So, you know, right now they're 19th in 3-point percentage. You'd like to see that number maybe creep up a little bit. But, you know, Minnesota, you know, they are still a good offensive team. They're obviously fourth in the league in overall field goal percentage. So You know, they're finding other ways, but other ways to score the ball. But you'd like to see Minnesota, you know, kind of pick it up from three. But you know, it is an encouraging sign that they're willing to shoot from beyond the arc, and they're finding some success, especially recently in that area.
Absolutely. There's your love hate from Mitch. Also, stay on the lookout. This pod is going up Thursday. There's a Friday podcast going up. I had the host of the Locked On Bulls podcast to talk about the Bulls-Timberwolves game. Make sure you stay on the lookout for that, and that'll help lead you right into the weekend. Mitch, thanks for coming on and helping me break down this exciting game.
No problem. Wish we probably could have talked for about an hour and a half on this game, but 100%. Hopefully we were able to touch on everything.
100% we could have. Absolutely. The show notes going into this one for me were absolutely chock full, and I was not sure how we were going to squeeze it into the time frame where I usually like to keep it about 30 minutes, but we managed to do it. I think we did an okay job.
We did. I agree.
And thank you all for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.